Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your host, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. According to Reddit, I'm the number one cuck boy. Joining me, as always, in the High and Mighty studios. Did I say John Gabris at the end of that? Either way, you know who it is at this point. If you're this far into the podcast and not sure who the host is, this is your fault. And if you think I'm distracted, it is because I am. My desk, my current High and Mighty coffee table looks ridiculous. You'll see a picture to see what I'm talking about. Joining me, as always, in the High and Mighty studio is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris, and my guest for today's first on the nose episode. I've been hosting High and Mighty for now 101 episodes. For 102, we're going to actually talk about weed. So I wasn't going to bring in just some stoner friend of mine. I brought in a legitimate cannabis expert from Bon Appetit, Rye Pritchard.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Oh, yeah. For those of you listening at home, we have like 1,000 people watching this live in my living room. Yeah, we're live. Rye came in and just set up like an attaché case full of such exciting, different, what do we call these here? Paraphernalia, all sorts of grass in all different ways. Want to talk us through what we have going on here, Rye? Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm just so keyed up. Before we get into what we have going on here, let's talk about how you have the best job title ever. Cannabis expert?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of just fell into that whole thing. I'm like a photographer and a writer by trade, but once I started doing these shows, they're like, what do you want to be called exactly? And I'm like, fuck if I know. So they just call me cannabis specialist or whatever.
Right. It would be pretty weird if on Bon Appetit, when you were talking through, your chyron just said photographer, because it'd be like, why is this guy talking
about this guy?
Everybody?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Will this photographer shut up about terpenes already?
Yeah, exactly.
How'd you get into cannabis in like the way we all do? Someone passes it to you at a party when you're like 15 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I was 15. I smoked a joint listening to Warren G's Regulators with my dumbass high school friends.
What a great song.
And that's kind of where it started. And then I got I discovered there was an online forum called overgrow.com. And that's where like all of the best growers from around the world got on to talk about their shit. And so I got obsessed with like the background of it, like where all the strains came from, where the strains originally came from in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Thailand and all these places. So that's kind of where I got my strain knowledge, was starting back then. And then I just sort of,
Were you trying to grow at the time, or you were just that interested?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was growing, like I ordered seeds from Amsterdam when I was 16 and grew in my mom's closet, or not in her closet, but in the closet of my mom's
in
house.
Her house.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I built a little cat.
I was like, there's gotta be a better hiding spot than your mother's closet.
Yeah. She'll never know. But yeah, so I started growing in my house then, and that's kind of what started my love for it.
Oh, that's wild. You're like, I guess if I were to like back in the day, you would always be like, I can't get caught smoking weed. But if you catch your son not only smoking marijuana, but engaging in it on a level of curiosity, yeah, you almost want to be like, wait, you learned how to grow plants? No, I guess maybe it was worth that habit.
Yeah, my high functioning stonerness like started at an early age, I think.
That's the thing I always think about. And first of all, anyone who dabs, but also like seeing you on the show, I'm like, I'm a high functioning stoner, but my job requires me to just be able to talk. But the second you guys are like cooking or mixing or using a blowtorch, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That's the big impediment for me getting started on dabs, because they're always so fun. But the second I have to have a blowtorch, I'm like stressed.
No, I totally get that. And that's why, you know, it's nice. Like now there's electronic nails and there's all this other sort of stuff. So you don't have to do it. But I'm a traditionalist. I like the blowtorch. I don't know. You get more control. You can kind of clean it off easier. Right, it's just, I don't know. I like the blowtorch.
I'm a traditionalist to the point where joints are my favorite. Way to get high.
Yeah. I mean, I'm normally a dabber. Like when I'm at home, I pretty much just do dabs because I, you know, like I got a kid at home and stuff. I don't like smell like weed all the time.
So. I got a kid, so I got to get these dabs done.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, out here doing the show and stuff, I'm just smoking joints constantly because I can just, you know, be at the house with a bunch of dudes and we just hang out. So it's nice.
Yeah, you're telling me, like talking about my dream. You know, I go just drinking, smoking, hanging out, eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all I do is watch that show with my wife, and my wife, who doesn't get high, is just like, how are you not on this show? I'm like, I became friends with someone on the internet. This is how much I love this fucking show.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think I said this in a tweet to you guys, but my favorite moment is whenever Abdullah has to like sum it up at the end of an episode, and it's clearly on like hour four of the sesh, and he's
totally.
And then it just ends like, and the food? Was good. You know, like with a smile. And I was like, that's so fucking heroic. Just like having to sum up an entire evening while it's super baked.
Well, yeah. And then like you get the notes from the network or whatever. And they're like, so we need to talk about like the larger societal issues. And like at the end of that fucking meal, you're just like, first of all, we've been shooting for 12 hours and we just want to be done. And then poor Abdullah's having to like talk to these stone guests and like try to link it all together in a nice little package. It's rough. I definitely don't envy his job having to like entertain people. And I just like pop in and drop terpenes into a thing and fuck off, you know.
So how do you go from growing weed to like what's the next steps in your cannabis career or passion or as a hobbyist?
Well I mean I was just smoking weed and learning about it and doing kind of my same nerdy shit, internet research and whatever. Yeah. And then I was working at the University of Colorado in Denver, just like in the financial aid office. And I met some guys that had like a review website where they would just go around and do kind of like food reviews. And I had actually started my own blog like that. And so that was kind of the first time that I kind of put myself out there as like a weed writer and a, you know, a connoisseur or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I started with a company called Kind Reviews. We probably reviewed 500 strains throughout like the early days of Colorado, like 2009 through 2013. So I met all of the people who are now like national brand presences. Most of those came out of Colorado.
Right.
California's always been kind of a weird gray area thing. So
they've obviously been growing weed in NorCal for a very long time.
Totally.
Colorado, they have been too, but now it's like they're completely recreational. You hear like the Colorado farms. I'm like, what's happening in Northern California now? Well, now there's legality there. So we have, I just got lost in my own train of thought. I couldn't imagine why.
I know. We haven't even smoked this giant sour diesel joint.
I know. You're rolling up a huge sour diesel joint right there. Yeah. You have a skill set. That's the other thing. I can't even host a podcast, which is just talking, which is what I'm supposed to do for a living. And Rye is answering questions and rolling a fucking monkey finger joint.
It's like muscle memory at this point. I can just kind of fire through it. But
that's like when you see like there's that video of Snoop Dogg when he's rapping on stage and rolling a blunt with his other hand, like a microphone in one hand and a one band blunt roll. Is like, guy's a
pretty
fucking
insane.
Champ. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, so I mean, I just kind of started with that website, and that's where I actually got the photography thing. I was just basically handed the camera, from the owner of that site or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was just like, here, don't touch anything. Just leave it and just take photos. And so then I had to like teach myself how to do photography. So now I'm like, I do photos for High Times and covers and shit like that.
Right. Was that like macro lens stuff at first? Cause I saw that on one episode of Bon Appetit. You had that fucking zoomed in shot. It was so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm known for. I mean, there's only probably like 10 like dedicated cannabis photographers. Like I can't take fucking photos of people for the life of me, but I could get super down close on the plant and shoot grow rooms and whatever.
I love how when you get super zoomed in on a bud, it looks like an alien landscape.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, with the weird little, like, snork trees, like the,
trichomes?
Yeah, the trichomes,
snork trees, I like that better. That's what attracted me to it. Like, when I was in, I went to Amsterdam with my dad when I was 19. And so,
so
I got to.
Your parents have been supportive of your habit/career for a while now.
Yeah, I have very supportive parents. I saw some photos by this guy named Jupe, who's like a legend in Amsterdam, and he did like these microscope photos. And so that was the first time I was like, what the fuck is that thing? And then once I understood that, like, in the heads of those little crystals is like all the medicinal value. The leaves, everything else is just garbage, basically.
Yeah. That was like the first time I took like 5 years off of smoking weed from like all through college and a little bit after college because thought I was going to become a federal employee. I was going to be an FBI agent.
You better get used to it. Yeah.
Briefly. But when I was in college, we went to some dealer's house and they were like, had like a shoebox sized thing of grass in it and they were shaking it and that had like, so it was like a primitive grinder, what I now know as a grinder with a keef catch.
Yeah.
And they were like, these are the crystals, man. This is the stuff that gets you actually fucked up.
Yeah.
So what we do is we trim it off some of this bud, sell the bud, break even on that, and then we smoke this stuff. And I was like, and then I just like talked about it like as a legend for like 5 years. I'm like, there were these dudes in my college who were smoking like crystallized marijuana. And people were like, I think that was meth. I was like, no, I swear to God, it was crystallized marijuana. And they were like, there's no such thing. There's no such thing. And then Keef, like you finally hear about Keef again, which I think was like the that's the first step past like dabbling in weed that you hear about.
Yeah,
Keef,
totally.
I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, Keef is most people's like training wheel concentrate. You
right.
Because
yeah.
you just make it. It's kind of a byproduct. It's just there. You can just scrape it together and cap your balls with it or whatever.
Yeah, it's like anyone who just buys a grinder for the sake of rolling joints then learns that this thing at the bottom catches super potent a concentrate, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Keef is the most traditional concentrate, like in Morocco and Nepal, places like that. That's how it starts. It's always like a sifted product. Sometimes they press it into bricks or they work it with their hands into like temple balls.
Oh, right.
But yeah, that's a 5,000-year-old human tradition. So,
yeah. I'm glad to be part of it.
Absolutely.
The only rituals or traditions I've maintained. Concentrates are a huge. We have our windows open because we're going to be blazing here, but apparently also the neighborhood dogs are excited about.
Dogs love cannabis.
Yeah, they really do. My dog, you would think, works for the DEA. We'll shut the door when we start smoking, and he'll push it open.
That's awesome.
So concentrates are like the big thing that I feel like I know nothing about. I know about that they exist and that dabbing, no flowers, hash butane oil, and then like there's just a bunch of words that I know, but I'm not sure where they all divide. Is this something you want to like talk me through here or talk us through here?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, basically there's two categories of concentrates. So there's non-solvent concentrates, which is generally like water hash or dry sift, which means that it's just a mechanical separation. So
there's no chemicals added.
Correct. So like with water hash, you basically wash the plant material with very cold ice and water that breaks the trichome heads off, and then you kind of sift it and separate it.
So ice bubble hash, ice water hash, that's the kind of stuff.
Yeah, ice wax. They call it a bunch of different stuff. So if that's made really well, it's amazing. I mean, I've seen water hash tested 85% THC before.
Oh, awesome.
But it's kind of a spectrum. I mean, most of that hash is going to be like 60% or something like that. Keef is the same thing, but it's a dry process, with screens and whatever. And then you go into the whole world of solvent concentrates, which, you know, includes CO2, includes butane, any hydrocarbon blend is like, you know, butane, propane. You could do extractions with like hexane, but nobody uses that usually because it's kind of noxious. Butane's probably the most common, a lot of the stories, especially out here in California where it's a little unregulated.
Because like, they're making it in their house and they blow it up. At least according to YouTube videos, you
100%.
Blow up your mom's kitchen trying to make oil. Now, so what is that? You're at the butane, the hash is being dissolved in the butane?
Yeah. So basically like the trichomes all over the plant surface are butane works as a solvent. So it basically washes them off. It chemically just dissolves them. And then you end up with like an oil that's just cannabinoids and terpenes, which are the aroma and flavor compounds, and flavonoids, which are flavor compounds. And that's basically all you have in the solution. But once you have that solution, then you have to get the butane out of it.
Okay. Yeah. That was my question. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, butane and hydrocarbon extractions are used in like to make aloe. They're used to make like mint oil. They're used in a whole variety of things. But they sort of got a bad reputation because of those dumbasses doing it in their right. house.
And it sounds bad because it's like, oh, like if you're like, don't rip the bowl for too long, you don't want to hit a butane. And then it's like, what about butane hash oil? It makes it sound like,
Which is funny. I mean, that's one of the main like misconceptions is that like, oh, you know, because it's made with butane, it's bad for you or whatever. But if you get the butane out of it, the amount of butane that you would be consuming doing a dab or whatever is infinitesimal compared to the amount of like lighting a joint.
Even. Right, right, right.
Because, you know, you get 750 PPMs or so just holding the trigger open on this Bic for five. For
Do you hear this? You know? This is, I love where you hear this, listeners. This is some fucking science knowledge being dropped. PPMs.
Yeah. So like in Colorado, they actually just recently changed the laws. It used to be 800 PPMs allowable in concentrates. Now it's actually 5,000 because that's what the FDA allows in other compounds.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of, we're in a weird gray area where the science hasn't really caught up to, you know, the industry yet. And so, you know, public officials are sort of left with a position of like looking at other industries and then just kind of modeling it off of that. So 5,000 PPMs is a little more than I would personally want to consume.
Right.
But at the same time, there's not really any categorical evidence one way or the other. Like the FDA says that you could breathe 5,000 PPMs of butane over an 8-hour period. Like if you're working in a workshop or something.
Right, right.
And
with
that's
no
the point.
Long-term effects.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, that's what they went off of.
Right. But then there's also people like, the hemp wicks. Someone turned me on to for lighting joints and blunts. And I'm like, this is for, like the old, what's it called? Hookah style, where you just kind of like hold it. I was like, oh, this is great. And he's like, and then you don't get any butane. And I was like, oh, is butane bad? Holy shit. Butane could be. And I just went, classic stone spiral of like, what the fuck? And so then that includes your waxes, your butters, your oils,
shatter. Like live resin and all that sort of stuff is generally made with solvents. Like most people are doing either pure butane or like a butane propane blend.
Artie is currently climbing rye and possibly because he has green on his hands.
Yeah, you like that diesel? Yeah, what's up?
He's you lived in New York for 6 years, bud. You're into it.
Yeah, it's all good. Huh? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he's got his little DEA vest on. He's coming in. Totally.
You know, solvent concentrates get a bad rap in some sense, but I mean, they're my preferred product. And I think they're the way, like the way that butane works to wash the cannabinoids and the terpenes out is much more efficient than like CO2. It's much more efficient than water hash. And you can end up with a cleaner final product if you do it that way.
Yeah. So by the end of it, it's just the flavors, the thing that, to dumb it down super, it's just the flavors, the thing that gets you high and the thing that gives it smell. Right?
Yeah. I mean, ideally, your final product would be just cannabinoids, which are, you know, the THC, the CBD, all those components, and then terpenes and flavonoids.
Oh, okay.
It should just be just essential oil. You shouldn't have any solvent in there. And then, like, with a water hash, a lot of the time you have, like, plant particulate and, like, just other bullshit that was on the actual plant material. So, you know, when you end up with something like this that I'm showing Gaber some it's called HCFSE, so that's high cannabinoid full spectrum extract, which is the solvent concentrate.
Oh man, I want to like put this on my gums.
Yeah, no, it smells crazy. It's
so, that is something you would dab.
Yeah. So this one is like a high crystal content. Mm-hmm. So this one's like, you know, 90% THC or so.
Jesus.
And then all the terpenes were separated off of this, or most of the terpenes. There's still some you can smell it. But,
Let's talk about that, because that's what I didn't know what terpenes were until I started watching Bon Appetit, and now I've heard you say terpenes over 1,000 times in my life.
Yeah.
So what are the terpenes?
So the terpenes are the essential oils of the plant that don't include the cannabinoids, basically. So they're the aroma, they're the smell, aroma and smell are the same thing. They're the aroma, they're the flavor. And they're really, there's a lot of arguments that they actually dictate what the high is, because this whole indica sativa thing is generally bullshit.
Is that what? Because I truly have smoked a lot of weed and I cannot tell the difference.
Like, I feel like it's like wine for me. I cannot tell the difference between highs except when I have a particularly good one.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, ooh, Gorilla Glue number four hybrid. Yeah. Like that, that's going to be good. And it's like, okay, Malbec. Now that's what I, that's the red wine.
Note to self. I like Malbec. Yeah.
But I've been thinking, cause sativa versus indica, you know, and like I have friends that are super like, I'm not smoking indica. It's 4 p.m. I don't want to be asleep on the couch. I'm like, if I'm tired and I smoke the speediest weed possible, if I'm wound up and my brain is going 100 miles an hour and I smoke indica, it still just exacerbates that, I feel like. Not exacerbates is not the right word, but.
Yeah, it like blends in with whatever you're doing. That's how I feel too. And I think a lot of that's a body chemistry thing.
Yeah.
Some people I definitely know, you know, they smoke a sativa or a certain type of sativa and their heart starts racing and they get kind of uncomfortable.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a thing. Like it's a thing in a general sense, but the actual categorization is like a misnomer basically.
It's like a thing in that there are different types of strains, but there's this whole like indica couch and thing is not necessarily.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like, not a simple half or sativas, half or indicas.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, everything's a hybrid and it's all a spectrum. It's all shades of gray, basically. Like modern cannabis has come so far.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Arthur is in a complete mode. Did he get a ball underneath there?
There you go, buddy. So, I mean, the original classification was really just like the shape of the plant. So like indica plants are short and stout and they have big wide leaves. Mm-hmm. Sativa plants are tall and lanky and have thin leaves. But the guy that categorized them actually thought that they came from different places than they did. So like the name indica was given because he thought it was from India. But actually those plants have been genetically shown to be from Afghanistan and Pakistan area. And that's why they grow that way, because they're grown in a fucking mountainside in like rocks. And so they need like big, thick, heavy leaves to last the winter and all this sort of shit. So, you know, the idea that now in 2017 that we have quote unquote indica and quote unquote sativa is kind of ridiculous, because it's all just hybrids. It's all been hybridized at some point or another.
You said something really cool on Bon Appetit that I actually brought up today. It's like the reason so many different strains exist is because it being illegal, people had it. Oh, we're growing XJ13 over here. Well, we are trying to too, but we might not be doing the exact same shit as you guys. Or everyone has like whatever strains they're crossing in their areas, which led to so many varietals.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's, you know, people always ask me like, how many strains are there? And I'm like, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, there's got to be 10,000 plus. I mean, and also what is a strain? Like people call Blue Dream a strain, but Blue Dream is just a hybrid of two things that are arguably strains. Blue Dream is just one plant. I mean, it's a clone. It's one plant that was found that has now been passed to everybody. It's not really a strain. It's like a single plant. So like, you know, in terms of horticulture, you wouldn't call something a strain unless it's like stable. So like if you're breeding tulips or something, you don't just cross two tulips and then you have a new varietal, is actually the word they would use, of tulip.
Yeah.
You need to like breed it within itself again and again and again.
To
until
prove
the point,
that that's repeatable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, when you put a bulb in the ground, you're going to get a tulip that looks like this. And until it gets to that point, it's not even scientifically valid in terms of horticulture.
Oh,
so, interesting. So we use the term strain in such a broad way. Like in reality, there's probably not that many strains, but in the cannabis nomenclature, there's 10,000.
You know? Right, because if they were not cannabis plants, you would say like, oh, these plants are all within one family. Maybe there's slight variations between them. Yeah, maybe there's like a few different sours, like is a strain. And then like within it, the delineations are not that different. Arthur, you're going to have to chill, bud.
he's like, grr, where's my ball? I dropped it. I was careless with it. And now you had to fix it. Yeah. Huh. That's good.
And so you prefer the dabbing, or at least concentrates. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like the reason I smoke weed and the reason I love weed is because of the flavor. Like if there's 10,000 different strains, there's 10,000 different flavors. I mean, you can take two perennial plants. Like you can say, here's a haze and here's an OG and we're going to knock them together and create seeds. And every one of those seeds is going to have a different profile. So, I mean, culinarily, like It's right. so much more complex than like mint or basil or any of these other things, because there's thousands and thousands of possibilities.
Oh, and so then that's why for you, this gets rid of all the burning, all anything, and it's yeah. just purely the flavor.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you can take like shittily grown weed that if you smoked it as weed, it would taste terrible. Like if it's not flushed correctly, if it's, you know, fed a bunch of garbage, like all that stuff matters way less when you turn it into a concentrate.
Because you're getting rid of 99% of it anyway, or whatever, yeah, X amount of percent of it.
Yeah, yeah, if you do a good job extracting it, and it's not treated like complete dog shit, but you know, if you do a good job extracting it, then you're just getting the essential oils. So yeah. all of the residual nutrients and all this other sort of stuff just is put aside. So it's much harder to grow weed that's great to smoke at the end than it is to grow weed that can be used for concentrate. And so that's part of the reason why it's becoming so proliferated, is because people are like, well, I got all this weed that's not great. I'm not going to get a great dollar value for it on
but
the shelf.
But if you make some great wax yeah. off of it.
Yeah, then you make more money overall. Yeah. You know?
Wow, that makes
especially
sense.
Out with these Cali prices where it's, you know, 70 a half grand and shit, which is insane. Come to Denver, it's like so much cheaper. It's nuts.
Insane. I know, I was paying like $70 yeah. an eighth of grass in New York yeah. delivery, and yeah, then I yeah. came here and I was like, this is on top, and then I hear about Colorado, I'm like, oh fuck, that sounds even better.
Yeah, I mean, and that comes with regulation. I mean, you know, 3 years from now in California, it's going to be exactly the same thing, and it's probably yeah. going to be cheaper because you can grow outdoors here so much easier, and you have
right,
a big
warm
season, you can yeah. get two harvests a year out here.
I gotta get my checkbook right and get some investments going when it goes
yeah, it's going crazy. It's going super crazy right now.
What are terpenes?
So, I mean, yeah, terpenes are just the aroma and flavor components. So, I mean, like on the show, we use them a lot of the time, like you would use a mint extract. We're like, we're making a sauce. We want it to taste a little bit like cannabis, but in all the good ways, not like the plant material, the chlorophyll, the whatever. Yeah. So we'll just drip a couple drops of terpenes in there. And they're so potent. Like I have some bottles here so you can smell.
I would love to whiff a terp.
So, you know, like this one is a Durban Haze terpene. Mm-hmm. So this one's like, you know, kind of sweet and sweet traditional sativa sort of smell.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
It's super potent. I mean, we've used like 3 drops in something and it's like tastes crazy where you're like, whoa, that's too much. So we're like using micro drops. We're using half drops.
Oh, wow.
And I'm talking like a batch of sauce.
Yeah,
like,
no, I see. You know, like, I can yeah. only imagine. Geez, that. And that's just the flavonoids that you were talking about concentrated. Yeah. So that's why it gives it the smell and
yeah. So that one's a Death Star. So it's a little more rich, a little kind of earthy. Yeah, that's sour diesel and Sensi Star. So you get kind of this weird sort of beef jerkiness smells. From the Sensi Star and yeah. So I mean, there's you know, there's a whole world of flavor. And like when we're working with chefs, the terpenes are the thing that always freak them out, because they're just like, whoa, I smell green mango. Whoa, I smell pine. Whoa, right. I smell this.
I love that moment in every episode. Yeah. And all of a sudden someone like when they're not smokers, like, yeah, or yeah. like when Marcel like smell and he's like, whoa, like, holy crap. I can yeah. never imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love when like non-weed people get on board when they're like, yeah, it's very lemony. You're like, yeah, it's because it's lemon OG, blah, blah. And I love that. It's like, it just goes to like, it's not just a stonery thing where it's like you could taste the citrus.
Yeah,
baby.
if you think about it really hard, you can taste it. It's like, no, it's fucking like citrus oil. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, like, I've been told this so many times where people are like, I don't think strains are really a thing. I don't notice a difference, which, like, I mean, like, I get it. Like, we just talked about, I don't feel drastically different from one to the other anymore.
Yeah, based on highs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like, but they're so different. And like, the aromas and the smells are and the flavors are so different.
They look, they visibly look different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
For like, that's what, like, I always thought was like, people are like, yeah, there can't be any difference. I'm like, well, this one is like orange and this one's purple. So like, yeah, yeah. Like, but, yeah. Maybe they make you feel the same way, but they're clearly different. It's like red wine and white wine. And
yeah, you're yeah.
like, well, they both come from grapes, bro. Just drink it.
And the funny thing about purple weed is that the purpleness is actually a terpene as well. So like, it's a plant pigment, but it also has a smell and a flavor.
Oh.
So it's called anthocyanin, and it's the same thing that makes blueberries blue. It's the same thing that makes violets violet. But it has a certain smell to it. So a lot of the time when you get traditional purple weed, it all smells similar. People are like, it smells like purple. It's,
yeah.
It's actually a real thing. And then they're smelling the anthocyanin.
So, oh, interesting. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. The perp. I remember like perp was something you like heard about in 90s hip hop yeah, for a while. Totally. You're like, we got to. Someone was, actually, I probably shouldn't incriminate the person I was talking to about this. It's only a crime because they live in a shitty state. Yeah. But, they were talking about how, like, remember when we were coming up and it was like, the weed we knew about was like endo. Hydro, and it was like Kind Bud. We're like, yo, is that Kind Bud? And I'm like, what the fuck were we thinking the difference was back then? I think Kind Bud maybe just meant like good, not ditch weed. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, so when I was in, how old are you? I'm 32.
I'm 35.
Okay, so so we're right around the same time. Like, as I remembered it in high school, we had schwag, which was you know, Mexican brick weed generally. We had like good schwag where it was like green and didn't have like tire fragments and bullshit like that in it. So that's like one step up.
It didn't look like potpourri. I remember when you got schwag and it was like, I'm positive this is from a hamster cage.
Totally, totally. And then we had what we called in Colorado anyway, we called it pretend-a-kind. So it was kind in the sense that it was nugs, but then it still had seeds in it, but it would get you super high. Like, I don't know where all that shit came from. And then we had Kind Bud, which was always like, it was nugs. It was always separated. It didn't have seeds. That was kind of the...
Yeah, like when that's like when it came like in that eggcorn bud shape and you were like... The first time seeing, going from seeing like bags of weed to like a bud of weed, you're like...
What the fuck is that?
You're like, wait, this is... Yeah. That's like you've been eating exclusively McDonald's hamburgers and then are presented with like a gourmet steakhouse burger and you're like, wait a minute. Could I've been eating them all like this? Hey, I'll bang down a couple of McDonald's burgers anytime. I'll have Coors Lights any day of the week.
Yeah.
But am I allowed? Does this stuff exist? Because I'd rather buy this shit. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember like the first time I ever got weed with a name on it, you know, and it was Trainwreck. And it was like, and it was the stickiest, smelliest, craziest thing that I'd ever had at that point. And I was like, oh shit. So this is what I need. Like, that's, I immediately went on the hunt and I was like, I don't want to smoke any of this other shit anymore. I just want to find that.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so I was like 16 when that happened. And so ever since then, I was like, where the fuck did this Trainwreck come from? And That's when I found Overgrow and all that stuff. And
that's really
learning.
Fun. That I have a very similar parallel story. When I was 17, we were going to this fancy beer bar in my neighborhood. Shout out to Effin Groovin. I was 17 years old, but I hung out with this like one dude who was like 22, and we would all go in and pretend to be 22. But it was a fancy beer bar, so we were trying to be cool. So we were ordering all these Belgians and like craft brews. And then by the time I go away to college, I'm a beer snob. Like, I'm the guy. I'm the only freshman in college who's like, Busch Light? Okay, I prefer a Pilsner if we can get one. And it's like,
like, what the fuck's a Pilsner?
Exactly. And then I can imagine you're
you
like
mean
the
Natty
dude.
Ice? Yeah.
You're the dude in the dorm who is like, hey, is anyone have, we're thinking about getting some Chemrec OG. Who's in? You know, or whatever.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That was like, my friends were like, we're going to split a 30 rack of Bush. I'm like, I'll probably get a 12 of Killians. Like, I thought I was being like fancy.
It's red. It's very sophisticated.
That's how you know it's good. Is Trainwreck still your favorite strain?
No, not even close. I mean, that's one of those funny things. Like, I don't even know if that was actually Trainwreck that I got, but it's
exactly.
Just, I just knew that it was sticky as shit and it was a big giant bud. And I mean, we literally stuck that one to the wall. It was probably fresh too. We probably got taken for like double the weight, but yeah, no, I mean, my favorite shit is probably OG. I mean, which is a very like base answer, especially here in California.
Right.
There's something about it. It's that plant.
Is that
special.
A California strain? Is
no,
that
I mean, it's as far as I know, like we've been trying to dig this up for 15 years, but, as far as I know, it originated in Florida. That was like the first traceable place that it was around. And then it made it out to California in 96.
Oh, wow.
And so there's some people in California that swear it was out here before then. There's some people in Florida that swear it wasn't. So it's kind of nebulous. But like the crew that I tracked it down to was in Florida in the late 80s, early 90s. And that's where all the OG came from. But.
That's so awesome. You just said, by the way, we've been trying to uncover that for 15 years. Yeah. I just pictured the coolest group of scientists. We're on it. Just dab rigs. We're going to get on in 1 second.
Burning the midnight oil. Yeah, totally.
Literally.
But I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, there's places now that are doing like DNA analysis and all this sort of stuff, trying to piece
23
together.
23andMe of weeds. Yeah, that's
yeah,
smart.
Yeah. There's a place called Phylos. I forget what the last part of it is, like Phylos Genetics or something. But they actually, you can go online on their website and you can see like the genetic links to all these strains. They make like a big universe and you can like move around within the universe to find like related families and all this stuff. And it's all based on genetic testing, which is really cool.
Oh, that's so awesome. Forget mapping the human genome. I want to know where Jack Herer falls in this lineage.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's super interesting. The pitfall with that is that you can only know it insofar as the person sends you a sample and says, hey, this is Jack Herer.
Right, right.
So, you know, they probably get a lot of samples from a lot of different places. And if they all say it's Jack Herer, but they're getting different readings, it's like, which one do you pick?
Right. Oh, interesting.
And that brings us back to the strains conversation, which like Jack Herer is a strain, but there's 15 different clones out there called that as well.
And what is a clone when someone says that? I've seen that a few times.
So like, basically if you, I mean, cannabis generally would start with a seed. So if you start from a seed, you determine the plant's a female and you really like its qualities, then you'll take a cutting off of it. And so it's the same thing with tomato plants, with whatever. That's how most horticulture is done, is with asexually, with clones.
Oh.
So basically you just take a cutting off the plant, you get it to root with some rooting hormone, and then you have a genetic copy of that mother plant.
Oh, okay. So it grows a second version of that plant, but not a new, technically, birth from the beginning.
Correct.
Plant. So that's why it's a clone. And then sometimes those clones can't reproduce on their own, right?
So, I mean, like a female cannabis plant doesn't generally reproduce on its own. You can like stress them out and they'll actually create male sexual organs and then seed themselves. And so
there's a fucking plethora of like, if you stress the female plant out, it'll grow male parts and
it'll grow dicks and balls and fuck itself. Yeah, totally.
I feel like same thing, but with my wife's nightstand drawer.
Exactly. So I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So like in a, you know, if you think about a plant, if it's growing on a mountainside and it's like, oh fuck, winter's coming, then it'll figure out any way to reproduce and keep its genetic lineage going on. So like with something like OG Kush out here in California, there's 500 different OGs. They're like, oh, it's the Michael Phelps OG. It's the this, it's the that. And like a lot of those are bag seeds, meaning that the OG plant fucked itself, made seeds in itself, and then now they have a bunch of OG seeds, and now there's all these 50 OGs that they're releasing.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's because I'm always curious when they have similar lineage, when you hear like they have silver in it or haze in it, or you'll see like it'll be like they'll have like, I can't even think of an example right now, but like Jilly Bean or like three different things that have like similar root words or suffixes, or the second word is all the same, and I'm like, oh, are they from the same family? And I guess that's how stuff like that gets named.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, the way that it went with like cannabis breeding generally is that there were interesting strains from around the world. There was, you know, stuff from South Africa, stuff from Mexico, stuff from whatever. And in the early days, in like the, you know, the mid to late 70s into the early 80s, a lot of the, you know, genetic kind of pioneers of cannabis started breeding these things together. So they'd take, like I'm friends with Mel Frank, who's like one of the, you know, he's like a, you know, close to pushing 70, I think. And he's, you know, he's been cataloging this stuff since the beginning. So like he's responsible for like Durban Poison. So he got Durban seeds from Ed Rosenthal and grew them in California and did selections on them. And then those all went to Amsterdam in the 80s. So like most of the cannabis that we smoke now went through Amsterdam in the 80s and then was bred by seed companies and then sold to people all around the world.
To be made legally in Amsterdam or whatever, because there it was just easier.
Yeah. It was easier. And like in the UK, seeds are legal. So you can possess all the seeds you want in the UK. And you can mail them out to people in the U.S. without any real responsibility. And so that's how the seed banks proliferated, was they set up shops in Amsterdam or in the U.K. and they were able to send it all over the world. So like a strain like Jack Herer was made by Sensi Seed Bank in Amsterdam. And it was bought by all these different people who all got genetically unique seeds. And so now all these people all around the world are growing quote unquote Jack Herer.
But all different.
They're all sort of different because Jack Herer is a three-way combination of Northern Lights number 5, Skunk number 1, and Haze C. So, you know, you can get hazy plants, you can get skunk plants, you can get Northern Lights plants.
Right.
And you know, those.
So if it's like one is, if it's 33, 33, 34, or 33, 35, 32, it could tweak like in those increments, it could be like, oh, this is a very
hazy strain of Jack Herer. This one highlights the haze part more or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like in the most simple sense, like if you have a skunk plant and a haze plant, when you cross the two, the male and the female, and then you get all the seeds, you'll have a spectrum going from all the way skunk to all the way haze and everything in between.
Oh, okay.
So like we were talking about earlier with the stability thing, if you, for example, found that you like the haze leaning plants more, you would take a haze leaning male, a haze leaning female, breed those together, do it again over generations and generations, and then you'll have a sativa leaning expression of Jack Herer or whatever, or like a haze leaning expression.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Like it's sort of, I guess it would be like if they were corn plants, you'd be like, I like the sweeter corns. It's like, okay, tasting these two kernels, these are the sweeter corns. Let's pair them off. Let's lose this this more bitter corn and so forth. And so, and aiming to keep doubling down on the traits you want from it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how like apples, that's how like all these other pieces of produce and flowers. We talked about the Dutch, like the Dutch were responsible for flower breeding pretty much the world over, and they still are. So like the Dutch went insane over tulips in like the 1700s and 1800s where they were paying, you know, the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of dollars for tulip bulbs, like a single tulip bulb.
Just to have everything.
Yeah, because it grew in a way where there were stripes, you know, like there was a royal family tulip, which grew in a certain way. And so people paid all this money so they can have the royal tulips and all the shit.
Holy shit.
So they kind of started the genetic, like, anti-diversification, because they're like, oh, we like these traits and these traits. And so it just whittles it down until now you have 10 types of tulips and nothing else. And so that's what happened with cannabis as well. It got whittled down to the point where it's like, do you want skunk? Do you want Northern Lights? Or do you want haze? And that's everything. And they also took those genetics all over the world and bred them with existing land race plants and fucked those gene pools up. So the Dutch, you know, through colonialism and through a lot of other things, have fucked up a lot of stuff in terms of biodiversity. So they kind of have a long history of doing that. But
thanks,
you know,
Dutch. Yeah. Between that and fucking wooden shoes, you've ruined everything for
exactly.
us. Yeah, I thought it was one of the most standard stonery thing to talk about is when you go to Amsterdam for the first time and you come back and you're like, that was amazing. And then you smoke LA weed and you're like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Like you thought I'm going to Amsterdam, the birthplace of it all. And it's like, oh, we have better weed in California and Colorado and in America, but you just can't smoke it in public like you can there, which is like I went with some New York people and they were like, this is the best in the world. They're like, it's no big deal to you because you could just shop for weed. I'm like, but you still can't like light up in an area set up to smoke, which I think is. I can't wait for the cocktail bar version of a weed place, you know, where like, oh, yeah, you can go to your dispensary or you can go to a cafe where everyone is blazing. You buy like single use shit and hang out and order food. Like, that's the dream.
Yeah, I mean, cannabis is such a social thing. And like there was a study that came out recently that I think it was like, you know, the majority of people smoke weed alone. And that's super weird and shocking because, you know, it's such a social thing. But like because of the stigma and because of the ability to not use it in social settings like that.
Yeah.
Then most people that smoke weed are just they're like, well, I'm at home. I'm in the privacy of my home. I'm just going to smoke and go to bed or whatever. But I think there's a whole world of like social interaction that's being robbed of us because we can't do that. And a lot of people would much rather go and smoke weed with people and hang out and have some food than they would go get shit faced with people and then regret it the next day. You know? So,
well, that's the thing. It's like, coming home and gassing three vodka sodas by yourself is weird. Going out to the bar and having three vodka sodas with friends is fine.
Yeah.
Coming back, like sometimes I'm just like coming home and I'm like, oh, I don't have shit to do for 4 hours. I'm going to go rip a bowl. And I'm like, I would much prefer if I had like a neighbor that I was like, hey, I'm going to rip a bowl. Come on down. You know?
Yeah. Or like after
the grill's
work,
on.
Yeah. After work, you go stop by the weed cafe and you have a coffee and you smoke a joint. I mean, it's, that's the one thing that, you know, Amsterdam, like we talked about, the weed is not that good. It's grown in apartments mostly, or it's like smuggled in from Spain and it's not that great. But the socialness of it is amazing.
And,
you know, just being able to sit down and there's like, you know, old ladies and their grandkids walking down the street and you're just sitting there smoking a joint. I mean, it's great. And nobody thinks twice about it.
Yeah. Or like just when the guy hands you a joint over the counter and you put it in your mouth and light it. Like it's
amazing.
Feels,
yeah.
It feels crazy. You're like, thank you. That would, like you can't even do that in a bodega. If someone hands you a beer, you can't just thank you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it's very instant gratification. And like also, you know, in terms of an industry, like, you know, a craft brewer can go to his buddy's brewery and sit down and talk shop, and they can figure out how to make the next great IPA or the next whatever. Like the cannabis industry doesn't really have that right now. We go to fucking trade shows and stupid shit like that.
But right.
The ability to just sit down and brainstorm and do that, like you have to do it in your house, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so you don't meet strangers. You only meet your friends over and over again.
Yeah, it's right. It's like kind of and then like sometimes going to those weed conventions or whatever feel a little bit like, oh, this is like if you were a real fan of Comic-Con, but then you just saw like weird chicks dressed as Lilo Dallas multipass, you'd be like, yeah. Okay, I thank you, but I'm here for like the collectible items. Like I'm here to actually talk shop about terpenes with some people, not just fucking get a picture next to a chick in a marijuana leaf bikini.
Outfit.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Yeah, the fetishizing of female smokers is insane too.
Yeah, it's super crazy. All the Instagram, like we always call them like bong humpers. You know, that's kind of
their poses are all very similar. Yeah.
Well, and the funniest thing is like a lot of the time I'm just like, all right, put in some effort. Like it's always like some like wrinkled t-shirt that they're wearing and they're just like no pants. I'm like, what the fuck is this Porky Pig shit going on here? Like, just put some pants on. Like,
I truly think it's ridiculous, but I think I follow about three of those Instagrams.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, it's.
But it still combines two things I enjoy very much.
Exactly.
as much as I think it's tacky, sometimes tacky's nice.
Yeah, exactly.
let's blaze a little. Yeah, let's get into it. Squarespace, make your next move. People, get a website. What are you doing without a website? I hate to be the guy in the old fat dude screaming, get yourself a website, but you do. When Russia hacks us all, don't you want to have a cool website? Don't you want to be hip and Putin for hip, for Putin to go, hey man, I love your little banjo suspender Kangol cap rock group you guys are part of. It's so exciting. I love the dude who plays Just Two Sticks of Wood. Guys, Squarespace lets you build a beautiful website, online store, whatever it is you want to sell, whether it be t-shirts or a podcast or headshots or, you know, close-up pictures of celebrity men's feet, like whatever, wink, wink, whatever it might be. Squarespace offers you a unique domain experience. It's flexible to use for any kind of website. It's super easy, and with my promo code, you get 10% off your first purchase, no matter how much stuff you buy. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com. Enter offer code MIGHTY to get 10% off your first purchase. That is squarespace.com. Enter offer code MIGHTY to get 10% off your first purchase of Squarespace, motherfucker. Oh. Oh. Ooh. You have no idea what that noise is right now, but that's me touching the freshly shaved part of my neck where I use Dollar Shave Club, and the Dr. Carver shave butter. Ooh, my neck is smooth, my cheeks are cute, and in between is a nicely trimmed, beautiful beard. Guys, this stuff is for real. Dollar Shave Club's the smarter choice. You can get a great shave, great price, conveniently, all blah, 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 all that stuff. It's an awesome life hack. You don't have to go to a store, which is, of course, good. But here's the stuff I like about it personally. All the standard stuff I love. You know, it comes to your door. It's quality. It's cheap. And razors are like an insane monopoly that is destroying the pockets of young, newly shaving boys. For limited time, you can get your first month of Executive Razor with a tube of the shave butter for only $5 with free shipping. And after that, razors are just a few bucks a month. So in your first box, you get the handle, four cartridges, and a tube of the shave butter. Now, it's all a great package, but for me, I really like the shave butter because it's a nice shaving cream. But one of the things is it's clear. So I'm going to make sure I get my lines right when I get my lines tight. So next time you see my cheeks or neck, give me a little like, ooh, mister, someone's on that Dollar Shave Club grind. All right, you can get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/mighty. That's dollarshaveclub.com/mighty. Respect your neck. Protect your neck. Hey, mighty. So you brought a joint of Sour Diesel straight from New York?
Yeah, shout out to our weed producer, Jason Pinsky. He's he's a legend in his own mind, and he's got some beautiful New York Sour Diesel that he gave me when I was in New York, actually. So, this made the plane trip.
That's how you know it's good if you're carrying flour on the plane. I thought that Weed Expert was a good title, but Weed Producer is a pretty solid title as well.
He pushed so hard to get that title, and he finally got it. So.
Oh, that's so awesome. I guess if it was like Chef's Table, you could be the food producer. Why not?
Yeah, there's culinary producers. I mean, he curates the pantry, basically. So if you watch the show, The Pantry, most of that shit was sourced either by him or by me, and it was all just from our friends, pretty much.
So cool. That pantry is – I love that moment when you open it for everyone. The Trap Kitchen guys were the best. We're like, oh, we going to get high.
Yeah, those guys were amazing.
I was watching with my wife, who doesn't watch every episode, but she was like, I feel like this is a lot of weed that they're putting in the food this time. I'm like, I think it is. Yeah. And then you see like you and Vanessa, right?
Yeah,
and they're going like, okay, yeah.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah.
No, and you're like, I distinctly remember maybe it was the THC crystals. You're like, yeah, just a crank or two of that. And they were like, and just start going in.
Yeah, they go to town on it. There's we've had a couple times where the chefs kind of fly a little bit loose with their dosing. But I mean, we generally try to keep it pretty low for people because a lot of the times people are being a dinner guest and they're on TV for the first time.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, because a lot of people are like writers and stuff like that, so they don't do TV shit a lot.
Right. And then it's like, if you're smoking and eating edibles.
Exactly.
Like, that's the fucking ultimate double-edged sword, is if you're blazing and the only snacking food within arm's reach is also medicated. You're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh shit, I'm super stoned. All that's left in front of me is weed caramel corn. It's like, oh fuck, this is going to be bad.
Yeah. It's kind of hard. I mean, we shoot long days. It's always like a 12-hour day.
Yeah.
We don't eat a lot of regular food. And so like me, I'm you know, on camera doing the cooking and some of that stuff. And so I get left with like the chef scraps a lot of the time. So I'm just eating like half eaten chicken and shit like that. But
this is very good, by the way.
Yeah. No, it's proper sour. But it's interesting because, you know, we try to keep it to like, you know, 15, 20 milligrams for the entirety of the meal.
Yeah.
You know, usually they're sitting there eating for up to 2 hours.
Okay.
We have to stop to get beauty shots of the food and all that sort of shit. So, you know, usually what happens is they show up, they hang out for a couple hours, get super high with Abdullah. You know, because we just sit around and smoke joints all day in the house, so we just
That reminded me of another great moment is you tending to smoking the meat overnight, and it's just you in the night sky changing colors,
yeah, totally.
And you just burning through joints, like just fucking chain smoking joints.
Yeah, that was a real thing. I actually stayed up for 16 hours and actually smoked that meat, and it actually turned out pretty fucking good.
Yeah,
so,
that's wild. You're like, someone has to do this. You're like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Literally, I mean, we were gonna have some poor fucking PA come and like and spend the night and sleep on the couch. I'm like, dude, I live at the house that the show is shot at.
Wait,
yeah.
Oh, because you're from Colorado.
Yeah. So I'm from Colorado, and like
I was like, you're getting ripped off, man. You're not supposed to have them shoot at your house.
Totally. So like anybody who's like the Vice crew, you know, we have a California office and a New York office, so a lot of the camera people and producers and stuff like that are from here. But then myself and Pinsky, the weed producer, and Abdullah and our other producer are all from New York. I'm from Denver, but we all stay in the house, and so we're, you know, we just live there. You know, it's fucking the most insane thing in the world to like wake up in the morning and be like, what do I want to smoke? And you just open that fucking ridiculous pantry.
Holy shit, that sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's a weird dream I'm living in right now. It's like I can't quite get a handle on it.
It's like the guys from the show Workaholics, the house they filmed in the first, they lived there for the first season or two. Yeah,
that's
it
crazy.
Was their own home. Like,
wow.
They thought they could save money by renting, so they would have to like be there for 14-hour shoot days and then go to sleep there. That's like the most stress.
It is. There's not a lot of work life separation on Bon Appetit. We just like flow right into it.
So. But you get to go from chock full of dosed food to 8 feet to your bed, which I think is like an ideal setup.
Yeah, I needed that after the Trap Kitchen dinner. That one, I was super fucking high. That macaroni and cheese and the pineapple upside down cake was strong.
Oh yeah,
it was
legit
strong.
Do you get super high anymore?
I do. I mean, I do off of edibles mostly. Like, yeah. Like me, I'm dabbing all day and whatever. So I kind of get to like my equilibrium, and then right. I'm just looking for different flavors. So I just do different dabs all day. But yeah, I mean, edibles, like when you eat them, they actually metabolize into a totally different chemical. So I don't eat a ton of edibles. And so I don't have much of a tolerance to that chemical. So
yeah, I find it to be completely different too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when it goes through your liver, it converts and it turns into not Delta 9 THC anymore. And so like I have, you know, quite the tolerance for Delta 9 THC, 11 hydroxy THC. I do not. So, right. But yeah, so it's, you know, and like when I first got involved with the show, I was like, fuck, I don't really eat edibles. I don't like make edibles like that. Like yeah. I understand all the science of how they're made and how to dose things and whatever, but I don't generally enjoy them. But like doing the shows made me think about edibles in such a different way, where it's not like, here's an edible, it's meant to get you high. It's more like implementing cannabis into food as a whole.
Yeah.
You know? And that's,
so it's more like, here's food, you might get a little high from it.
Yeah. And it's more like, I mean, we use it mostly for flavor on the
right.
show. Like
that's what I think
and
is texture so cool.
And,
yeah.
and presentation. I mean, Vanessa's like a queen with all the desserts with leaves on them. I mean, she always
I
comes
love
up
the,
with cool
the,
ways.
The full fronds in the corn, not corn cake. Cornbread.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 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 No, it's, I mean, that's kind of become her signature. Like, we sort of started it like way in the beginning. And then now every time we're like, oh shit, how can we use these leaves? But I mean, cannabis leaves are going to be like the next great health thing, I think, because they're actually more nutrient dense than kale.
Really?
They have all of the essential amino acids and essential fatty acids. It's super, super crazy.
Oh,
so I mean, you can stuff a big bale of leaves into a juicer and get, you know, an insane amount of value out of it.
And with no psychoactive, because that's what we're talking about, the non-bud part of the plant.
Yeah, well, and if you do, I mean, you could even grind buds or like, you know, live plants.
As long as you don't heat them.
Yeah, as long as you don't heat them, then you're just getting THCA, which is incredibly beneficial. You know, it's an anti-inflammatory, it's anti-anxiety, it's like a whole bunch of good things, and it has those actual nutrients in it, omega-6, omega-3 fatty acids.
You just made me think of a question I've been meaning to ask since, like, can CBD really get you, like, knock away psychoactive effects? Undo THC a little bit? Because I was very curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, chemically, so, like, with chemical interactions, there's protagonists and there's antagonists. So, CBD works as an antagonist to THC, meaning that it chemically balances it. Mm-hmm. So like I ate a misdosed ice cream the other, like a couple weeks ago, and I woke up at 3:30 a.m. holding onto my fucking bed with my heart pounding and head spinning and shit. And I was like, uh-oh, you know, that ice cream must have been stronger than it said. Because I had eaten one like a couple days before that, and I was like, oh, this is really good. And then the one that I ate the second time was kind of grainy, and it just sort of had a different texture. And I was like, maybe this isn't right. But of course, I kept fucking eating it
because it was
like,
ice cream.
It was like midnight and I wanted the snack. So, I woke up at 3:30. I was fucking flipping out. I mean, I knew exactly what happened, so I wasn't like scared, but I was just kind of like, I got to deal with this. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like kind of like just getting diarrhea from drinking, where you're like, I know how to do this, but fuck, I'll deal with it.
Yeah. So, I ended up, I was like, fuck, what do I do? I'm just gonna like go drink some water and see if it, but it like didn't go away. I was up for like an hour and I'm like, fuck, I'm like in the thick of this. So I went downstairs and I dabbed some CBD. Like, we have some CBD isolate, which I think I brought with, to show you, but yeah, so I had some CBD isolate, which is like 99% CBD. And I did like three big CBD dabs right in a row. And within half an hour, I was good.
Wow. So,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's my personal experience with it. I mean, we, you know, generally there's like anecdotally, like people that smoke a lot of CBD tend to need more THC to get them high.
Okay.
So it kind of digs you in a negative high hole, and then you sort of like dig your way back out of it when you add THC.
Oh, okay. That's fucking cool. Yeah. I smoked I don't really smoke CBD all too often. But I smoked, I got like a free, you know, 420 was not too long ago. So I hit up all my favorite dispensaries for all my goodies to make sure I got all my goodie bags. Yeah. Again, shout out to the Emerald Room on Melrose. This is not a Rye Pritchard. This is me, John Gabris. I'm not, I got to shout them out. I feel like they can hear me. The place is so close to my house. but I smoked a CBD joint because my friends were smoking cigars, but it was like the middle of the day. I didn't want to necessarily get high.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's hard to see people smoke without wanting a joint.
Yeah.
Like, like shows like High Maintenance, Bon Appetit, even shows that most TV shows when they start, if I'm really into it, I'm like, fuck, I gotta go smoke before I watch this. But like watching High Maintenance and fucking Bon Appetit or Weed a Kid, I'm like, I need to smoke. Like, yeah, totally. I can't watch someone else do it for that long.
Yeah.
And not try to get involved myself.
Yeah.
So what the fuck was I saying when I started that sentence?
Sour Diesel's kicking in.
Oh, so I smoked that CBD joint and I was like, oh, this feels great. I got the taste and the flavor of smoking a joint, but I wasn't twisted at all.
Yeah. No, it's nice. I mean, for people that get anxiety when they smoke, I would recommend like consuming some CBD, like just in your general day, and then you're less likely to get anxiety from THC.
Oh, cool. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And earlier we talked about terpenes a little bit, and my contention is that terpenes are actually what makes you feel the quote unquote sativa and the quote unquote indica effects. Because like, if you look at aromatherapy, if you look at a lot of other fields like that, you know, for example, the smell of lavender is from a terpene called linalool. And so lavender is known for like being relaxing.
Yes.
And being, you know, and that's, it's, you know, certain heavy strains have a ton of linalool in them.
Oh.
And so it's like you smoke it and you get relaxed and you get smooth.
It is funny that like sativas smell like citrus, like poppy fruit, and yep. that indicas smell like cheese and basement and like, yeah, you know, yeah. like, or like mm-hmm. earth and like stuff that, and it's like, that's weird that the taste would correlate sort of with the feeling they give you. That doesn't make that much sense, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Unless it is the terpenes that is causing it. That's such a cool, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why people can smoke, like some people will smoke a quote-unquote indica and they get an uplifting effect. And that's because whoever sold that to them just was like, oh, well, the two plants that went into it were quote-unquote indica varieties, but this particular plant actually has some of those other terpenes, and so it'll take you a different direction.
Oh, do you want to give some, I mean, is this like asking me to name my favorite comedy movie? Like, do you have favorite strains of like for anything specific? Like, oh, if I'm going to go see a movie, I'd like to do blank or because you're so flavor oriented, that's more the angle you come at it for.
I mean, that's yeah, in general, but like I would say in a general sense, I like OGs when I'm kind of hanging out, like right now, like yeah. if we're like hanging out and talking with a friend or like eating food or something like that, where you're just kind of having light conversation or whatever. I like OGs because they're relaxing. I don't, I have a little bit of like anxiety and shit a lot of the time. So
right.
OGs cause that to go away for me generally.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to like be creative or if I have like a lot of work to do, then I'll smoke like some really kind of uppy equatorial sativa type shit. And usually the way that I judge those is if they smell like eucalyptus or like sandalwood, those are the ones that usually really get you going.
Oh, interesting.
Whereas like the sweet stuff, like the haze, like that kind of sweet citrus, like
yeah.
that's kind of a mid-level sativa to me. That's like a 70%.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Cool.
But
yeah. Oh, that's I love, dude. It's just so fun to hear. I love if anyone's interested in anything as much as you are interested in weed, I would want to talk to them about that topic. But I'm so interested in weed. I'm just like, I have like 1 million questions and I'm getting high and I'm like, okay, let's just make sure we cover all the important stuff. As if this is remotely journalism and my listeners are going to be like, well, you never even got to the terpene part. Like, I'm going to lose people on this. As if people who are listening to this aren't just high, like oddly riding a bike around their fucking hometown.
Yeah, totally.
I like, and so what do you think what flavors do you think people don't know, like do you think people don't realize they're having? Because I know I'm always thinking like the two kinds of plants taste like either fruit or cheese, like a fruit or earth, or, you know, or root vegetable.
Yeah, I mean,
but like I see on the show, like you have like these ideas to pair foods where I'm like, I don't even know what weed, like, you know, you're like, oh yeah, we need something a little grapey with this, and I'm like, yeah. How does you like the, is your flavor like, are you that good with your palate, or is it like after just doing it over and over? I'm just asking a mile long question, but
you know
what I'm getting at here.
No, I mean, like, in Denver, I started doing these flavor parties called Terp Quest. And so basically what we do is we, you know, the first one was like liquid nitrogen juice sorbets. So we got all this like cold pressed juice and we did liquid nitrogen sorbets. And then we like, you would take a dab, eat the sorbet, take another dab. And the dab influences the way the sorbet tastes. And then when you have the sorbet in your mouth, the dab tastes different. And so there's a lot of complex interactions going on in your mouth when you like breathe the thing in, because when you're breathing in smoke, as opposed to tasting something, it travels into your sinuses in a different way. It hits your palate in a different way. So like a good live resin, for example, will give you like three distinct flavors. You get one on the inhale, one while it's in your head basically, and then you get a totally different one when you're exhaling and when you have like an aftertaste.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I saw you guys did that thing where you like, I think it was an oyster, then and then an oyster, the same exact thing again, but changing the flavor. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, so I mean, that episode, that was actually how I got involved with the show initially, was that I pitched that episode, you know, where it was just like a pairing concept, and then they ended up, you know, taking it back internally, the production, and then they needed like a co-host. And so I put my name in the hat for that position. And I basically did the same thing where they gave me all the episode guidelines. I told them what I would do, how I would infuse the things. And then I ended up getting the job. But that particular episode is like super dear to my heart, because that was basically, you know, my brainchild saying, I want to show this. And I got to do it on fucking national TV, which is the coolest thing I could ever imagine.
I love it. It's like, you're like, truly, it feels like true fusion at that point. I mean, putting it into it is pretty, you know, serving dosed food is pretty fusion, but like where you're combining the flavors like chasers of like, now sip this with, you know, like, oh, you like this wine, now have a piece of chocolate, now sip the wine, feel how it's opened it up in a different way or something like that. It's cool to think about marijuana at that. And you wouldn't want to necessarily, I mean, is there a world in which even burning flour could affect taste? Like, would that be... It's just so harsh to get smoke in that kind of annihilates flavor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I prefer dabs for that sort of reason. Right. Because, I mean, A, when you like blow them out, they smell good. I mean, they don't like overwhelm and make everything smell kind of skunky and whatever like weed smoke does. So yeah, I mean, I think you get a purer flavor with dabs, and then it's also just makes for a more pleasant experience. So we use them for like intermezzos and stuff like that, where you'd get a little like, you know, sorbet for a palate cleanser or whatever. We just do a dab.
You know, that's awesome. So I can't wait till there's a dab I could do before bed that like brushes my teeth and hits me with like a dope ass indica high for fucking going to bed.
Yeah,
dab. Vitamin C dab. Yeah. And you start feeling sick.
Totally. And I mean, we're right on the cusp of that sort of formulation. I mean, people are getting to the point where you can take all the things that you like and none of the things that you don't like, and really tailor it. I mean, there's dab, you know, like pens and stuff like that. People are doing formulations with certain terpene profiles for alertness, for sleep, for calm, for whatever. And they work. I mean, they work. And some of it is placebo. Like, I've seen a ton of times in my career, like doing, we used to have like teams of strain reviewers.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we would not play jokes on them, but you know, we would test them. Just, we tell them it's something and it's actually something else. And they would react as if it was what we told them. So, I mean, a lot of the sativa indica thing, I think, is placebo effect.
Yeah. I think you might be right. Cause I believe that as well. Cause I remember someone was like, I can't smoke indica right now. I'll pass out. And I'm like, I feel like that's not true about indica. First of all, like, and maybe if you convince yourself that if you smoke indica, you fall asleep, that's good to have in your life. Yeah. It's good to have that spiritual connection. But I was also like, I think the rest of us are going to smoke this indica joint and be awake.
So. Yeah. Cause we're talking to each other and shit. Like, who falls asleep in the middle of a conversation?
Right. I was like, You've got that set, like, for example, like people who don't, I got really fucking high. Oh, I'm like, oh, do you want to take a hit of this? Like, no, I can't. I can't get high. I don't do well with it. I'm like, oh, why? They're like, I ate this cookie at a friend's party. And I'm like, okay, that's a completely different thing, just so you know. Yeah. I always feel so bad. I'm like, no, then you're going to, don't throw this whole thing away, because you could just try a little tiny baby hit.
Totally. That's what happens a lot of the time. Like,
you're chatting when like two joints have gone out.
Joint is out for like the fourth time. You know, that's one of the things with, like a lot of the times people that sort of dabble with weed, they usually do it like at a party. So they're like five drinks in and then they smoke weed and they're like, weed makes me sick. Weed makes me paranoid. It's like, yeah, that's because you've had like five beers and then you smoke and like alcohol opens up your pores in your stomach and in your lungs and everything. So when you consume cannabis, it makes it stronger. And the same thing if you smoke cannabis and then drink, it's stronger, but in a different way. So like my rule is always like smoke first and then drink and then don't smoke again.
Oh.
They don't mix very well. Like a lot of people have bad experiences. They get the spins, they get whatever, and it's from that mix of things. And it's usually when they're drunk and then they smoke weed. Then it all goes
that,
bad.
I find that a lot of times the people I know who are like, oh, I don't, because I hang with a lot of party people that party, and I'm like, party people. I hang with a lot of party
hey,
people.
Party people.
Yeah, it's like the 90s. I'm the 90s club girl. Yeah. And they'll be like, oh, I can't smoke. I'm like, they're like, I threw up last time. I was like, well, you also drank a bottle and a half of wine that night. It's like, yeah, but I always drink a bottle and a half of wine. I'm like, yeah, but you don't always also smoke.
Yeah, totally.
Like, and I'm like, when you puked, did only smoke come out of your mouth? And they're like, exactly. No. I'm like, well, then it can't be.
Yeah, it was wine. and that happens a lot with people who like dab too. So like they go to a party and somebody's like, hey, do you want a dab? And then they get like this red hot dab, they cough their lungs out, and they're like, I'm never doing that again. Like the first time I ever smoked extract, I'm like, I'm fuck concentrates. I'm never doing that again in my entire life.
Ugh.
And then I was introduced to like the skillet swing, which was like the old way to do it, you know, in like 2010, they had these little swings that you would use. And that was the first time I ever had like a good concentrate hit. And then I was like, oh shit, this is kind of nice. And so like a lot of people are like, oh, I did one dab and it was way too strong for me or whatever. It's probably because it was too fucking hot. So like low temp dabs are the best way to consume cannabis. Like I'll go on record. And anybody
you
like
heard it here first.
Yeah, I mean, we have like producers and people on the show that don't smoke weed generally, or they smoke it a little bit kind of. And every single one of them, when we give them a nice low temperature dab, they're like, ooh, and they have a great experience. And they don't do two dabs. They don't do three dabs. You just do one nice low temperature one and you're good. And you get an amazing flavor, and they're like, I never knew it could taste like that. It always tastes like smoke. It tastes like burning.
Yeah. And I could only imagine, like, especially if it's, they're not doing the coughing or the, like, you're not getting all that nose burn and stuff, how much easier they can roll into that high, too. Because, like, I can imagine the sensation if you're not really a smoker, taking a hit, cough 10 times, and then just as you catch your breath back, you are super high. It's like, that's always... That's what I'm okay with. But you see other people and they're like, I'm having a hard time. I'm like, you should be. Like, that's bad.
And so like whenever, you know, like a lot of the chefs and stuff on our show, they're intimidated by dabs very much. And so we kind of like hold their hand and make them feel okay. And then we give them a dab and they always love it. And they're always like, wow, that flavor. And especially for a chef, somebody who thinks about things with a culinary perspective, it totally changes the way that things are, because the flavor is so strong and so clear when you get it right.
Oh, let's do a dab.
Let's do a dab.
I feel like we can. Yeah. We're coming to a close here. We can end on a goodbye dab.
So I got an amazing OG dab for you.
This is
from our buddy Fresh Off the Bud. He makes some really great concentrates. I'll blast this real quick with the torch. You have like a little paper towel or something, possibly.
I should have three paper towels and a bottle of lotion right next to my desk.
Perfect. All right, there we go. So I'm gonna clean this off. There's the torch noise.
I happen to have just one old dirty dab tool from when I used to. I had one of those vapes you had to load yourself.
Like a vape pen?
Yeah, like a vape pen that you had to like pack it in there. And I was like, this is very difficult to do.
Yeah, and that was the one thing I forgot was a dabber. I brought like the whole fucking pantry otherwise. But...
Yeah, he did. Oh yeah, let me grab a photo of that as well before this all goes away.
I'll take the lid off of some of these guys here so you can see what's in there.
It's going to be such a shitty photo anyway, so don't don't stress.
All these, we got the live resins there.
Jeez, look at this.
So we talked about it a little bit, but live resin is like the product that I'm obsessed with personally. That's my favorite product. And the reason is because it's made from fresh frozen live plants. So
that's the ones that they're like flash frozen and then a slowly crunch down.
Normally, you know, cannabis, when it's harvested for flowers or whatever, you cut it down, you trim it, you let it hang dry, and then you put it in jars and cure it and whatever. So that gives you a certain flavor profile, but like most people have never smelled a living cannabis plant, and the aroma that comes off of a living plant versus a dried nug is like not even in the same world.
Oh wow.
I mean, it's different. Like you smell different things in the same plant when it's wet versus dry, but it's you actually lose like 85%+ of the terpenes as it's drying.
Which is the flavor and aroma part. Okay.
And you lose all of the delicate terpenes. So like what are called monoterpenes, they come off of things at very low temperatures. And so you lose a lot of that stuff, and that's all the nuance. That's like how you really can tell varieties apart, is that sort of stuff. So live resin, you know, you take the plant at its peak when it's like the most full of essential oils, you harvest it, you freeze it, and then you process it cold, and that prevents any of those terpenes from flying off. So you have something that smells incredible, like an OG plant.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
And then when you taste this, like, you'll get the whole spectrum of that flavor, and you'll get, I mean, you'll notice when you taste it, you get like a frontal, an in your head, and an exhale. Oh. So that's why I love live resin. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Live resin is different still than is wax, butter, shatter. Are those all just different preparation ways for preparations of concentrates?
Yeah, it's all texture. So like when you get basically the way it works, like with a butane extract, you run the butane over it, you get all the oils out, and then you have basically like this soup of like cannabinoids, terpenes, and then the butane. So as you're getting the butane out, there's a couple different ways to do that. You can like agitate it physically, which is like whipping it. And so if you whip it, then it'll turn into a butter. It's like making a vinaigrette. You like emulsify the cannabinoids and the terpenes together into one thing. And so that's how wax is made. So you can make live resin wax, or you can make regular wax with dried material. Then like this, HHCFSE or live sugar, is separated. So these are all the cannabinoid crystals. And then the terpene is another fraction that you pull off.
So this is like, should be close to no flavor, but super powerful effect-wise?
Yeah.
That's it's pushing towards minimal flavor.
Yeah. And then like with the live resin sugar, we leave all of the terpenes in there with the cannabinoids, but you still have this crystal structure. So you have kind of like a sandy, like brown sugar kind of crystal.
Oh.
So it's all just in the preparation. And then if you don't disturb it and don't do anything to it, then you can have like a shatter consistency, which scientifically is called a concrete. And that basically means like it, you know, it makes like a matrix that's stable. And so you have like this kind of glassy, you know, see-through.
Those are the ones that come like folded up in a parchment paper.
Yeah, exactly. So you can make live resin shatter, you can make regular shatter, but it's all just the preparation.
But live resin is your favorite way, because as a man who's all about the terpenes,
yeah,
that's the one that saves the terpenes at its highest.
Absolutely.
I'm like proving to both you and myself that I was paying attention.
No, it's a lot. I mean, that's kind of the challenge of, you know, I can be super dense with terms and shit like that at times. And so when we're making the show, we're trying to make it for a general audience. So we don't want to scare people off. So I have to try to simplify things.
So right now you're heating up the rig.
Yeah. So this rig has a quartz nail on it. This particular one's called a trough. It's from a guy in Denver who has a service pig. And so he makes a lot of pig related things. So this is a trough. You can see the little pig in the bottom of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah. So basically what I'm doing is I heated it up, and then I just feel like with my hand, and then I sometimes blow on it, and I can kind of feel what the right temperature range is.
Oh, to get it to the right. Oh God. This is like the guys, if you're going to start dabbing, I feel like this is the way to do it. Yeah. I've damped like a handful of times, but it's always like at a party or in some way where no one, I'm not in full confidence of anyone I'm doing this with.
All right. So I'll just,
and what's my best way to hit this? How do you recommend pulling this?
Just start hitting it. I'll dab it on there for you. And then I'll cap it. So there you go. And so now I'm going to cap it with one of these jars. Oops. So that should be super low temp. It should taste great.
I took a bigger hit than I intended. But holy shit, that tasted awesome. Hold on. I still have it. Oh man, it's all in here.
That's the fun when it sits in your face. That's the real
magic. It's like
magic.
I can still taste it in my eyes. Oh, it's fucking delicious.
Yeah, so that's live resin, you know. I mean, it's you know, and you can do that from all these different plants, and you get a totally different experience. And like, that's kind of my lifeblood is that experience of like, holy shit.
It smells
shit.
Good in the room now.
Yeah.
I mean, it I like the smell of burning weed, of course, but that's a smell that I bet my wife would just be happy to smell, period.
Yeah, I mean that's why, you know, I generally don't smoke a ton of joints at home. I mean, I can do this all day, and I come home and I smell like fucking flowers. Right. Everybody's like, "Oh, you smell great." And our weed producer, he always does like he gets terpenes on his fingers and he like rubs them into his beard and shit, so that he's just like carrying around like Super Silver Haze scent all day and shit. But yeah, that's one of my favorite parts. Like this strain that I'm going to dab on right now is called Flow. It's super popular in Colorado, not so popular out here, but it's the most unique, like it smells like incense. It makes the room smell incredible. So,
oh, that's, you know, wild. Let's
see
do
if
it.
I can do that here. But yeah, dabs are the most misunderstood part of cannabis right now, for sure.
People, right. Cause to me, up until maybe watching Bon Appetit / this conversation, I looked at dabbing. It was like the shot of, you know, 200 proof liquor.
Yeah. And I mean,
to joints, wine, you know?
Yeah. And it can be, I mean, if you do a big giant dab or really hot or whatever, yeah, you're consuming more cannabinoids than you are with a joint. But when you do, oh shit.
Oh, right.
Well, authentic,
of course. Perfect. That happens.
Of course.
That's completely reasonable.
And here comes Arthur to...
Arthur's coming in to investigate. Fan is on.
Yeah, so that happened because we were burning the excess oil off of the nail. So normally, like, I dab in a lot of hotel rooms and stuff, and that's the only thing you got to watch out for is when you're burning it off.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, almost to a person, everybody that we've like given a proper dab just loves it, you know, and they're blown away by the flavor. They're blown away by how they don't get stupidly high. Like, it's a very controlled.
Like the speed at which the high comes on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like upon exhale in a way.
Totally.
I'm just like, whew. Yeah. That affected me.
Yeah.
And because a dab hits you in the septum in a great way. It feels like because you did so strong smelling and so powerful in your face. It's awesome.
Yeah. And depending on the variety, they hit you in different ways. Like, sometimes you'll taste them right on your tongue. Sometimes you taste them in your nose. Sometimes it changes. And that's like the way that we as humans experience flavor, is like a lot of it is smell. A lot of it is actual effect on the taste buds. So yeah, live resin does all that shit.
Oh, that smells awesome. It smells like grandma's house.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it smells like incense. It's very like floral. Yeah, it's very, yeah.
Wow. That's fucking wild.
Yeah, and that's what it tastes like inside your head too. I mean, it's such
guys, if you're like me, whose wife doesn't like the smell of weed in the house, maybe dabbing is the answer.
Yeah, and vape pens. I mean, we didn't really talk about that much, but right. You know, vape pens are kind of the way that most people are consuming cannabis right now. If you're in a state that has them available,
right.
And in a place like New York, where, you know, you're kind of worried about walking down the street smoking a joint and whatever. Everybody vapes out there. That's like
that's
number one thing.
It's the only thing I feel safe flying with. I fly with some edibles and a vape pen.
Yeah,
because I'm just like, I'm saying it's an e-cigarette until the day I die. Yeah, if totally. I have to. I always thought it's funny that, like, if the TSA worker was like, "Is this weed?" And I was like, "No, it's tobacco." And he's like, "Well, we have a guy," and then like some dude comes out of the back of the TSA and it's like, it's you in a TSA uniform.
Yeah.
He's like, "Well, this cannabis expert is going to hit it and tell you exactly." Yeah. When you're like, "No, I'm going to jail."
Shit. Yeah. It's funny. The TSA on their website not that long ago, which I think they actually pulled it down, but they had a thing that basically said, like,
we don't give a shit.
Yeah. We don't give a shit. And in my experience, they don't. I mean, I haven't personally flown with that much stuff. I usually just fly with a little bit of concentrate or whatever, but, you know, I know people that fly with, I mean, I know a certain group of people. We went to judge the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam one year, and those guys flew out with, you know, probably 300 grams of hash oil, like whipped butter, you know, like live resin butter. They flew out with that, and then they flew out with a bunch of flowers, and then they mailed flowers to themselves because they ran out of their OG, and they didn't like any of the weed in Amsterdam. And, you know, that weed was so loud, we got kicked out of hotel rooms just for the smell of it. We weren't even smoking in there. They just knew there was fucking weed because it reeked so bad. And those dudes were like, just took it on the plane. They don't care. One of them even got a little inspection note where they're like, yeah, we went through your shit, and all his stuff was still there. All the weed, everything was there.
Yeah, so. I know my friends who carry flower, like, put it in a sock or wrap it in, like, their prescription or their rec, and they're like, don't be that much of an asshole,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, what most likely happens is that like the TSA agent will see it and they're like, oh shit, I'm taking this weed.
Yeah. Exactly. And who are you going to report that to?
Yeah. But nobody's going to jail. You're just losing your weed. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Holy shit. I am glad I saved the dab for the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Rye, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me, man. This has been fucking great. I think if people, the listeners are going to fucking love this. And if you guys have follow-up questions, questions I didn't get a chance to ask Rye, obviously we can set it up for another episode, but you can also tweet at me and Rye. Rye, what's your Twitter? Are you on that at all?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm Cannabis Encyclo. And on Instagram, I'm Cannabis Encyclopedia. So that's Instagram is my number one. I don't use Twitter as much. Right. I'm kind
of
a Twitter idiot.
But, yeah. Or throw some comments at us. I'll post a picture of our table or of us. And throw some any other questions I should have asked. Rye, anything you want to plug? There's new episodes of Bon Appetit airing currently.
The newest episode is actually with Abdullah and I's mom. So we did like a Mother's Day brunch. My mom came on, and it was super super special episode. Really
that's
cool.
So
and,
cute.
We actually worked with Kismet, which is a really great restaurant here in LA. So those ladies came over and made a CBD brunch for our moms.
Oh, that's
and
so
we
cute.
We had an awesome time. So it's a super cool episode. It's every Wednesday. 10:30 Eastern on Viceland.
Yeah, guys, and you can check also out. Watch it online. Fan.
Yeah,
I highly recommend all of the marijuana programming Viceland has. Bon Appetit is great. Weed a Kid is great. Krishna is such an awesome host. And Fuck That's Delicious is technically weed programming as well. Action is my fucking like alter ego hero of just like if I did hip hop instead of comedy and I had a little more tolerance for tattoo pain, I would be just like that fucking guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Cool. As always, I'm at John Gabris, and I am currently very baked. And hit me gabris.com/shirts if you want to buy some High and Mighty t-shirts. And guys, we'll talk soon. Please hit us with some weed questions. I have so much more to learn. I just got my blue lightsaber to light my I've gained a level. Yeah, I'm so proud of myself. I'm going to figure out how to shut this off. I swear I can do this. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.